Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program number 590, interview with Daniel Hopsicker about the silencing of the lamb. That's spelled L-A-M. This is being recorded on March 25th of the year 2007. Once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the head, the maven, the personality of the Mad Cow Morning News at madcowprod.com, and also the author of the investigative pieces Welcome to Terrorland and Barry and the Boys. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Pleasure to be with you, Dave.
Let me just briefly recap what we were talking about on Side 1. We have been talking about some of the high-profile GOP-connected scandals, such as the Jack Abramoff scandal and also the Randall Cunningham scandal. Those, in turn, have sort of fed a derivative scandal, namely the uproar over the firings of various U.S. attorneys who have helped to investigate these GOP criminal goings-on. And we, in Side 1, noted some of the what I like to call evidentiary tributaries running between these investigations, relatively high profile, such as the Abramoff and Cunningham investigations, and now the investigation into the firing of Carol Lam and other U.S. attorneys. And we see these tributaries running back to the things you've been investigating in South Florida in connection with Huffman Aviation, the Arnie Kritoff Aviation School, with Wally Hilliard's activities, basically a covert action drug and arms smuggling milieu in South Florida through which Mohammed Atta and many of the 9/11 hijackers infiltrated into the United States, and perhaps most importantly, a milieu that has been untouched. There's been no substantive investigation or even coverage of Huffman Aviation and that sewer that you've been looking into. And perhaps the most important point of all is that what permitted the infiltration of the 9/11 hijackers, that portal, so to speak, is wide open because it's part of a larger institutionalized pattern of criminality which continues to branch out and sort of metastasize like a cancer all around the body politic. One of your latest articles, Daniel, you linked R.D. Hubbard, an associate of Randall Cunningham, to two independent Texas oil men, Wagner and Brown, who were the last known owners of the Wally Hilliard-owned Learjet that got busted with 43 pounds of heroin. So yet another link between yet another one of these scandals and the Huffman milieu, which is getting no coverage at all except by you.
There you go. I mean, that's exactly right. It's who these people are and how they got in position to do so much damage that really ultimately becomes of interest.
Well, it is, and one of the things you pointed out in Welcome to Terrorland, as the investigations, or as the attenuated investigations into Wally Hilliard and the activities in Venice, as the investigations petered out, but as people decided it was better to sort of relocate elsewhere, Wally Hilliard began snaking some deals up in Virginia, and apparently he lent some of his considerable capital to none other than Jerry Falwell and Liberty University. I bring that up because one of the things that's so striking about what you've been covering, and indeed the coverage on these other scandals, is that while on the one hand the GOP embodies the religious right, which of course wants to basically check everybody for hemorrhoids in this country, at the same time the GOP itself is just it is inextricably linked with criminality and corruption on a scale that most of us can only dimly imagine. I mean, it makes somebody who cheats on his taxes look like a choir boy.
And it all ties together in some larger way that we don't quite yet understand.
That's what I think is so significant about what I call these evidentiary tributaries. What it indicates is that the South Florida milieu through which Atta and company came is part of a much larger and institutionalized entity, one that's with us today and one that hasn't been dealt with at all. So in theory, what happened on September 11th could happen any other time because it has not been investigated and hasn't been dealt with.
And it's not in the interests of certainly the citizens of the United States that this stuff be allowed to continue, because it's not in our name that it's being done. If for example, somebody was cutting corners in order to protect the people of New York or the people of Los Angeles, you might go, well, you know, don't do that again. allow it to be. But whatever reason, whatever's going on here, is not protecting us. And again, Republicans just don't seem to recognize that. I mean, I have a friend out in Newport Beach who worked for an intelligence organization for like 35 years, and I maintain contact with him because I learn what people like him are thinking, and he'll send me stuff over the internet about, you know, good God, wouldn't Hillary be a horrible president, you know, and I'll write him back, yeah, you know, she's, you know, our first dominatrix as president, and I'll write him back, yeah, you know, an idiot followed by a dominatrix, you know, what a horrible country. You know, and you have to ask these people, where is Osama bin Laden? Our wartime president, who was supposed to be such a gung-ho guy, hasn't got Osama bin Laden. And it seems as if these GOP folks are defending the war in Iraq as if it was the war on terror, you know, and they're accusing Democrats and those of us against the war of being whatever it is they accuse people of. The word doesn't come to mind. But, you know, a real stand-up guy after September 11th wouldn't have invaded Iraq. He'd have invaded Saudi Arabia, because 15 of those 19 sons of bitches, were Saudi. And despite what Adnan Khashoggi-funded disinformationists want you to think about us attacking ourselves, we didn't attack ourselves. There's an enemy out there with grievances that may be just, but that's not our problem, those of us who just live here, okay? And when 3,000 civilians are murdered, I believe it's our duty to, like, bring to justice whoever did it.
Yep. Very parenthetically, Daniel, there is a real enemy in the war against, I call it Islamofascism. It's a viable term, and that's another subject, but one I've gone into at great length. But the bottom line is that the Bush family and the bin Laden family are business partners, just like the Bush family in previous generations were business partners with another very real enemy of the United States, namely the Third Reich. This is not an unprecedented phenomenon, and in a past program, I've been toned that I think one of the things that blunts a lot of people's understanding is, you know, those of us who are just down here at the ground level, so to speak, you know, we see September 11th, and we see it properly as an unconscionable attack on the United States, unfortunately aided and abetted by a fifth column and corruption in the United States. People of our ilk saw World War II the same way in its time, and yet to the people like the Bushes and the people like the bin Ladens, the people like the Thiessens, the Bush family's Nazi business partners from the Third Reich, the idea is to keep business as usual going on. And they see World War II, in some cases they like World War II or they like September 11th, but they see this as an unfortunate and in some cases unforeseen outcropping of a necessary business process. But what is important in these people's eyes is that business is business, and that business be kept going on as usual. And what that means is the sorts of relationships that resulted in the Third Reich and World War II, or the sorts of relationships that resulted in September 11th and the current unpleasantness, are simply an unfortunate but probably inevitable byproduct of something which is, after all, not so bad. Not so bad because it generates lots and lots and lots of money for the pieces of fertilizer that you've been investigating, Daniel.
Well, that's a particularly cynical way of putting it, isn't it, Dave?
And sadly, I'm afraid it's very true. You know, I'm afraid it's very true. I think that's, you know, after decades of studying this stuff and broadcasting about it, that's the way they see it. You know, it's an unfortunate outcropping of an inevitable business process. I'm going to let you run on about this, Daniel, but there was something that comes to mind in that context. Mussolini, the fascist dictator of Italy, was touring the Italian countryside with one of the Vanderbilts. I think it was Cornelius Vanderbilt, and his touring car struck and killed an Italian peasant woman who'd run out to wave at Il Duce as he went by. And he didn't even slow down, and he said basically to Cornelius Vanderbilt, or whichever one of the Vanderbilts was touring with him, he said, "Don't look back, Vanderbilt. What's one life in the affairs of the state?" Unquote. And I think that kind of expresses the viewpoint from this, the pinnacle of power, and there's a pun there, pinnacle, to the plateau upon which the rest of us exist.
Yeah, well, speaking of Pinnacle,
yes, we were, weren't we? Yes.
Yeah, the most obvious thing that I forgot to mention in the first half of the show is that Randy Cunningham's Hookergate scandal isn't the first Hookergate scandal that these folks have been involved in.
Explain, fill us in on Hookergate, Daniel.
Hookergate is Randy Cunningham and hookers in Hawaii, and we haven't heard from them, by the way. You know, I mean, wouldn't you think the National Enquirer would be all over that story? You know, I slept with Randy Duke Cunningham for money, and I didn't get enough. Something like that, right? Apparently, these folks are being kept under wraps. That's the Hookergates. And also mm-hmm. at the Watergate Hotel. They kept, and you have to wonder what this was about, okay? I mean, the CIA for 50 years has been using something called honeypots, okay? You compromise a foreign diplomat, get him in a hotel room with a gal, and you get pictures of him, and then you tell him, if you don't do what we want you to, we're going to mail this to your wife.
Or this another variant on the same theme. You get a picture of them. If they happen to be gay, you get a picture of them with a guy. And particularly if they happen to come from a conservative area where those sorts of things are frowned upon, then you've really got them.
Well, you know, there's even some suspicion that Cunningham's gay, that his hooker might have been a male, because they don't specify the gender of the hooker. And there was some, you know, reasonably plausible speculation earlier on in the scandal that he was had some secret. Not that there's anything wrong with that, you know. But actually, there's something wrong with somebody who is intolerant of anything but right-wing fundamentalist Christianity turning out to be gay. Okay, there's something wrong with that walking with not, you know, being who you say you are. So if that turned out to be the case, but Brent Wilkes is pimping for Randy Cunningham in Hawaii and at the Watergate in Dusty Fogo, and Brent Wilkes' brother is working for a guy who got busted flying in a half a dozen hookers from Vegas for some little golf tournament he hosted at a casino he owned in Indiana. And the interesting thing there is they never released the names of the guests.
Mm-hmm. In your article, one of the things you did mention, although the identities of the guests were never released. Now, am I confusing casinos and groups of hookers here? But a number of these hookers were told to make sure to bestow their favors, so to speak, upon wealthy, unnamed Saudi business guests, which places this in the same context as the sea of vice and Saudi-connected covert operations that we were looking at with Huffman Aviation, Alta and Company in Venice.
Right. Well, those are the same hookers. They had been told to visit the Keeneland horse sales in Kentucky, where every year they sell the yearling horses, thoroughbred horses, to entice rich Saudis back to the casino.
Mm-hmm.
So those were a couple women that worked at the casino. They eventually filed suit against the casino for sexual discrimination.
And a number of Saudi princes associated with the Lexington, Kentucky thoroughbred industry have cropped up in connection with September 11th and the financing of Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, believe me, I mean, I'm aware of that. But, you know, I'd also like to know who Brent Wilkes' brother Greg's boss, Artie Hubbard, flew in eight hookers for 49 special guests.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder if there were any politicians among them. I wonder if there are any names we'd recognize. And I you know, whenever I read, I mean, the basics of journalism are who, what, when, where, and why. And whenever I read a news story that doesn't go who, what, when, where, why, I know somebody's being forced to hold something back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, the recruiters of Mohammed Atta, the people that brought him to Hamburg, there were a couple dozen stories written about this couple in which they were never named. And they seem to me to be pretty important people. I mean, Mohammed Atta might still be in grad school in Cairo if these two German people hadn't taken it on themselves to bring him back and hook him up with a U.S.-German scholarship you know, send him on his way.
That, by the way, is the Karl Duisberg Society, or in its German manifestation, the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft. Very, very quickly, Daniel, For the Record, program number 587, the description for which will be up very shortly on the Spitfire website. I noted that that same institution, the Karl Duisberg Society, or Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, is also deeply involved with anthrax research in the United States, which, of course, accelerated dramatically after the anthrax attacks that were part of the September 11th terror campaign, so to speak.
How did you find that out?
This was sent to me in an email by a listener who came across what the description and the audio file for one of our interviews about Mohammed Atta and the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft. And right. He noted that the Karl Duisberg Society was deeply involved with a dual-use technology laboratory, which has labs in both the U.S. and Germany. It's called Fraunhofer USA. They're down at Delaware, at the University of Delaware. And the Karl Duisberg Society and people connected with it are deeply involved with anthrax research and other forms of biotechnological research down at a University of Delaware institution.
You know, this is all spook stuff. And don't you get tired of having the major events that occur in your lifetime be inexplicable to you? You know, I mean, they're inexplicable to me.
You know what? You know what, Dana, gets even more tiring is that I'm afraid a lot of this is explicable, and it's absolutely bloody awful. I mean, this is, you know, I'm afraid I do understand it, and that's one of the reasons why, that's the main reason I do what I do, because I think we are all headed for the last roundup here, Daniel. I mean, things are really bad, and I'm sad to say, I'm afraid I do understand it.
I'm glad I finally found something I can disagree with you about.
Yep.
Okay, I really am. Well, first of all, I don't understand.
Uh-huh.
And why I keep my nose to the ground and I'm poking around is because I don't. And I'm basically interested in finding out for myself, and if there's enough people out there, you know, willing to put up a little money to keep me going, that I could keep doing it. But so I don't understand. And the other thing is I would never suggest that any of us should ever line up with these millennialist idiots that believe that the end is coming. I mean, in any way, shape, or form. No, here's the thing.
Well, it doesn't mean you acquiesce.
This is the same thing. Same problem people make with global warming, okay? Generalizing from the particular, which is our little basic time frame, okay, to the general. I mean, it has always been the case that people always think things are about to end, okay? I think the far more horrifying prospect is that things are probably going to go on pretty much the way they are.
Yeah, let's just say I think that the world that we have grown accustomed to is going to be ending in all probability in favor of the one that's going to emerge from it, like some sort of sci-fi movie. But we're picking this here, I think, to a certain extent, Daniel. Let's get back to Hookergate.
We are talking about the big picture, and if there is an advantage to the form of government we have here in the U.S., it's that it's an iron fist in the velvet glove. And it seems that the basic agreement that we have with them is that if we leave them alone, they'll pretty much leave us alone. And I'm certainly hoping that doesn't break down anytime soon, because I mean, you know, as horrific as things can be, you know, it's not like thank God we don't live in Iraq, you know.
Not yet.
Not yet. Exactly.
Well, that really is, you know, this sort of ties back into one of the themes that I've been bringing up during the course of the discussion, which is that the factors that resulted in September 11th and everything that's come after that have gone unchanged. There has been no real substantive addressing of the problem, and the factors that caused that event continue unabated, and I think there's every reason to assume that something much, much worse could happen, because, as I've said before, I think the people that are involved in this criminal world, basically, really don't see the individual outcroppings as all that important, be those September 11th in our time or World War II decades ago. The idea is to keep the money going around, and if 3,000 people or 50 million people wind up getting killed as a result. Well, that is unfortunate, but the idea is to keep those cards and letters going out. And they've been going out, and you've been covering that.
Let's talk about just one.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about Gus Bulis.
Yep.
Because this week in the news somebody in the FBI has recommended that Jack Abramoff be released early. And Jack Abramoff is a guy who's got blood on his hands. Highly likely he has blood on his hands.
Yeah, Gus Abramoff, again, was one of the two people who bought the Sun Cruise casino boat line. That had been owned by Gus Bulis, who was murdered, according to one of your informants, allegedly by an associate of George Bush. No, is that Bulis himself was an associate of George Bush. That's what it was. I fused the synapse.
He was, and actually, what in the communication in which I learned that, what I learned was that what was being decried in that communication was how short a lifespan people that work for the Bushes and whom the Bushes find reason to disapprove of last after that.
Mm-hmm.
That's they were referencing, of course, the murder of the cigarette boat guy Don Arono down here in '86. But Jack Abramoff's flunky, Adam Kadan, idiot that he is, wrote $200,000 worth of checks to pay for the hit to the hitmen. And he hasn't been charged with the murder yet.
Supposedly that was for a consulting fee or something, wasn't it? They had some.
Right. How transparent is that? I'll tell you what, Dave. If I wrote a check for $200,000 to somebody that then murdered my biggest business opponent, okay, cops would be all over me.
Well, that's what's known as waste management, Daniel.
It's selective enforcement, okay? It's the concept of equal justice under law. No longer apparently exists for a certain class of people who some people call masters of the universe or God knows what you call them. But for any of us who yearn for, the kind of democracy in which, every citizen is treated equally, getting away with murder like that is just something that's got to just, I'll tell you what, as frustrated as it makes me feel, okay? What it has taught me that the worst job in the world, you know what the worst job in the world is?
No, what would that be?
Police detective in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Well, I think there are some other municipalities that could give Fort Lauderdale a run for its money.
Yeah, but really.
But there are a lot of places like that where, and this goes back to another of the themes, where crime and corruption are literally a way of life, so that to interfere with that crime and with that corruption in any way is to disrupt the fundamental existence of the people of that community.
Whoever said crime doesn't pay?
It pays a lot.
Exactly.
It pays a lot. If you can do the right crime.
Crime doesn't pay wasn't doing it right.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, it doesn't pay for some people, but it definitely does for others. By the way, we're talking again about Gus Bulis. Remember, it was one of his Sun Cruise boats after Sun Cruise was bought by Abramoff and Kadan that was visited by Mohammed Atta and company shortly before September 11th. And so again, when we see the Abramoff scandal, or when we watch the silencing of the lamb, when we watch the Cunningham scandals and others being attenuated, when we see Carol Lamb being fired, remember that if the camera dollies back and moves ever so slightly to one side or another, we're moving away from big-name Washington corruption, and we're focusing on what really happened in and around September 11th.
Yeah, it all works together at some level that we don't quite yet understand. Certainly when Randy Cunningham's biggest backer, the Titan Corporation, is spending $50,000 to fund a non-existent company in 2000 that 5 years later happens to own a DC-9 that happens to be caught in Mexico with 5.5 tons of cocaine on board. You have to wonder why nobody seems to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. And that, again, is part of the same milieu as the Wally Hilliard Huffman Aviation milieu in Venice, Florida. And so it'll be interesting to see if just how, to what extent the silencing of the lamb unravels and what eventually comes of it. You know, one thing, Dan, is we're just a few minutes left on this side. In a number of your investigative pieces, you have noted a number of interesting San Diego connections to September 11th, independent of the tributaries running between the Cunningham affair and the Wally Hilliard milieu in South Florida. People like Sam Kuchesvahani and others who were linked to not only the milieu of September 11th, but of the Heaven's Gate scandal. All of that was going on in San Diego as well.
Just 10 years ago, last week, I guess, was the 10-year anniversary of those poor people being murdered.
Yep.
An ex-Savak agent, and there really never has been, I don't think, a much more vicious Secret Service than Savak, an ex-Savak agent who moved to San Diego, owned the house, and was also in business with the guy that housed two of the terrorists in San Diego before September 11th. A man, I only went to San Diego once because I don't have unlimited travel funds here, but on my one trip to San Diego, I learned that this FBI confidential informant who housed two of the terrorists while he was a confidential informant was identified as a retired professor of English at San Diego State. Well, he's not a retired professor of anything, and he never taught at San Diego State. And it didn't take me, but, you know, half a day there to discover that. So who is this guy, Abu Sattar Sheikh? There's something that when you scratch the surface, when you look behind the curtain, you know, it's a false front. It's a false front. I don't know who this guy really was. But I know he wasn't, as he was described in the news media, retired professor of English at San Diego State. I know he got a phony degree from the same place Sam Kuchesvahani got it, a CIA-connected diploma mill.
We can only guess about how much easier people like that are breathing now that Carol Lamb has been silenced, because she was the U.S. attorney that was charging people like Cunningham and others. I guess she was the real San Diego charger, so to speak, but now she has been silenced. Daniel, tell people how they can access the information from your website and order your two books, because we're almost out of time.
Really? Because I had one more thing I wanted to say, but that's all right.
Okay, we'll have to say it. Can you do it real fast, or we'll save it for the next interview?
Just off the cuff.
Let's do it.
Where a lot of dirty money is going today is into a bill nobody paid attention to that was passed recently called the online education learning thing, in which people are now getting government money to go to schools that don't exist. And if you look at who owns these non-existent online universities, I'll bet you find some interesting people. Anyway, well, madcowprod.com is where you can find me, and I'll be there waiting for you. And as always, Dave, a pleasure to chat with you.
All right, I'll be interested to see that story about the institution of higher education. That's a reference to the drug smuggling networks that you've been documenting for us. Anyway, Daniel.
No, actually, I was talking about online universities.
I know what I was punning
you
there.
Making a joke. Well,
yep.
Well, good.
Higher education and drug smuggling was the essence of that.
Well, you know what? It's been too long since I've done drugs for me to have caught that immediately, Dave.
All righty. Well, listen, you're excused under the circumstance. Daniel, thanks so much for visiting with us. We have been visiting with Daniel Hopsiger. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program number 590, interview with Daniel Hopsiger about the silencing of the lamb. This has been recorded on March 25th of 2007. For Daniel Hopsiger, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.